It's only entertainment.
Welcome back to The Talking Hedge. I'm Josh Kincaid, capital markets analyst and host of your cannabis business podcast. Today with me, Michael Johnson, CEO of Metric. Michael, thanks for being with us at The Talking Hedge.
Thanks so much, Josh. Appreciate the opportunity.
Appreciate it. So Metric, you guys, well, why don't you tell me what Metric is? For those that don't know, what does Metric do?
Metric is the most trusted and experienced provider of cannabis regulatory systems in the country. We combine our solution is combines advanced software, RFID tracking, and also a dedicated customer support team, as well as a secure database to track any number of different events that happen across the supply chain ecosystem for cannabis, as many as 350 discrete events from seed to sale.
So is seed to sale, is that going to be the same terminology as trace and tracking, or is there a subtle difference? Do you guys do both?
It's a little bit of a subtle difference. And I think there are some nuances. Frequently, however, track and trace and seed to sale do get used interchangeably. A lot of seed to sale platforms exist, but they're not necessarily track and trace platforms. And so track and trace is a little bit more nuanced and tailored towards government and regulatory oversight. So we're tracking a product, tracking a plant, and then tracing it all the way through the supply chain. And it's actually a misnomer to even refer to as a chain. It's more of a genealogy of where a plant goes, because a plant could harvest a pound of flower, and that pound of flower could get broken up into multiple different packages and boxes and go to some part of it goes to a place that gets processed and combined with some other flour, and you know, another place processed, it combines with some other flour, and then maybe it's you know, distilled and broken down into, you know, an edible cookie or a gummy or something like that. And then those get broken up into different places. A chain implies like a direct kind of a one-to-one relationship all the way through. We have kind of a one-to-many relationship that can really demonstrate the true power of the complexity of the supply chain, and also the need to have something as robust as Metric in place. Whereas seed to sale is frequently incorporating more of an ERP, which is more of a licensee or a cultivator facing a product that helps them a little bit with kind of augmenting more of the data that's collected, and also helps them from an operational perspective. We're not an ERP. We have tremendous appreciation for our ERP partners, which I think frequently refer to themselves as seed to sale providers.
Do you guys are you using blockchain for that? Because there's a lot of other competitors that are doing it, and they haven't quite worked out. BioTrack tried to come into Washington State, didn't quite work out. So I'm curious how you guys are different from the competitors and what you're doing to you guys are obviously preventing this divergence from going off the regulatory market into the legacy market, black market. And what are you doing to track all of that? Because some of the data is not flowing through like it was supposed to in Washington State. That's how it was written. We're supposed to have access to that data. It hasn't been available for a long time. What are you guys doing? How are you different? Are you using technology like blockchain?
So blockchain's a little bit different. So there's a lot of folks that are a lot more smarter than I am as it relates to blockchain, and I'm sure it could provide some great visibility. But as I mentioned, it's not a one-to-one relationship. So it's a one-to-many-to-many relationship. That doesn't mean that blockchain's impossible, but it certainly isn't as effective or as efficient as the process that we've got now in terms of the relational data structure. And that's been working. It's been effective. Washington State's not one of our states. But we certainly would welcome the opportunity to enter into Washington State. The magic of our product is not really even the user interface or even the RFID elements, but that is quite special. It's really the relational data structure that allows for the collection of that data and the relationships to stay intact. Track and trace tools have proven essential in effectively regulating cannabis and really supports the heightened awareness around transparency and consumer safety, which is necessary to the ultimate survival. And so we're particularly proud of our ability to build resilience in the supply chains, which is a longstanding goal of both government regulators and business owners. We focus really heavily on that, where some of our competitors, I'm not saying that they don't focus on that. I just think our ability to come to market, our ability to find a solution that works best for the the growing ecosystem has been extremely effective, and we're very proud of that.
Talk to me about some of the issues you've had to work through in the past. There's a lot of data. I'm curious where that data ends up. Like I mentioned, Washington State's supposed to have access to it. It was really neat seeing what was flowing, trending, what was happening, and not having that, I think is hurting a lot of the manufacturers. In Washington, we have over 1,700 SKUs. Might not be an issue for somebody like Massachusetts that has under 350. They're able to handle that, in a better manner. But when things go down, when the systems go down and people have to then replicate that or try to duplicate that, it can be incredibly inefficient. And some of your competitors, and there's a lot, maybe you can also explain why there are so many that can't, essentially do what their core function is supposed to do. Like BioTrack, for example, I'll throw them under the bus. I don't care. They tried coming to Washington State, didn't work. And there's many like that. So why are there so many? And what have you done to increase your efficiencies so that when, things don't have to go wrong, like duplicating or bad data in, bad data out. You don't want employees putting the numbers in. So how do you essentially create a more efficient platform than a BioTrack?
I want to be certainly want to be respectful to anybody out there that's doing or that's making inroads to try and grow the ecosystem and support the legal cannabis ecosystem. I think we're different. We're unique in the sense that we have been built for regulators, whereas most of our competitors, actually all of our competitors, are not. And so there's a natural tension between folks that are trying to build something specific for industry facing usage versus folks that are trying to build something that supports the regulatory environment. And certainly there's a number of competitors out there that have done both. We have not. That doesn't mean that we won't, that we'll stay on one side forever. But I think the future for us is really to be focused on supporting governments. When you think about just the economics, which everything comes back to economics, governments have constrained budgets, right? They're not going to spend a ton of money on really anything. And there's only 50 states. And so if you look at yourself as a government only type of a product, you are somewhat constrained in terms of how much revenue you can generate. And we're not, we're somewhat profitable, but we're not printing money. And certainly would love to be able to grow and expand and help the business be more profitable. But it's much more important that we're focused on the mission to try and support and elevate the overall ecosystem. I would say the data point of your question really falls back on our process that's proprietary and patented using RFID. RFID is ubiquitous. It's the standard for agricultural technology everywhere in the developed world. RFID allows for folks to be able to automatically generate or automatically track everything in the ecosystem. Each tag that we have has an RFID inlay that has written onto it a 16-digit global unique identifier that's also printed on the tag with a barcode. There are certain states, like in Washington, for example, where folks can generate their own tag or their own identifier, and that creates a unique system to them. So it's only unique to them. It's not unique to the state, whereas or even to the overall cannabis ecosystem, whereas our tags and our identifiers are globally unique. So I can easily track anything across states or compared to even other countries. Anything that happens within our system, I'm able to kind of slice and dice and be able to provide meaningful insights to whoever that user is. Frequently for us, it's the government. Our process is a little bit more rigid than others. Some competitors, you can print your own tag and come up with your own number. But just like I can't print my own driver's license and I can't come up with my own driver's license number, there are benefits that rigidity and allow standardization across different types of platforms and allow standardization for folks that are a part of the ecosystem in legal cannabis. And it's really that backbone of the cannabis ecosystem that we're trying to be and that we're trying to support and really leverage so that folks can build the legal market and can prosper from the legal market.
So those tags are essentially your bread and butter. Is that your revenue model is you're charging a subscription for each one of those tags. So the more clones or the more plants you have, the more tracking that needs to happen and more revenue that you're making. I mean, I'm sure there's probably some kind of breakpoint or whatever. How, like, explain your revenue model, how that works out.
Yeah, there's a few different flavors, but primarily we're a usage-based model, which many software companies work like that. You get a ton of access, or you get a certain level of access for a certain price point and or for a certain number of users, for example. Our model is based on the number of plants that are tracked within the system, plants and packages. So we use the tag as a surrogate to, as a, like, you're getting something physical for it, but really, I mean, you're not, we don't really charge very much for the software. So the tag is really just a surrogate or a vehicle for us to charge for the software, which is really the primary element of our system. The tag does provide tremendous cost savings opportunities for regulators, because you can go into a cultivation instead of kind of doing an inspection and cherry picking some different plants. You can walk around an RFID reader and you can scan the entire, you get 100% inventory check. There's been situations where using that process, plants have been discovered that have crossed state lines. So I'm in a state, maybe I'm in Washington, and I, you know, use a scanner and identify plants that came from another state. That can only happen using this type of mechanism. Again, like, if I made my own tag, anybody can see, kind of, anybody can manufacture that to look any way they want. There has been less adoption, and I think this is an area of emphasis for us. There's been less adoption of the metric tag for industry-facing use cases for RFID. Some really good examples are folks that have been able to automate weighing using RFID-enabled tags or RFID-enabled equipment. But I don't think most folks realize how powerful and how much more efficient they can be using the metric RFID tag on the industry-facing side. A cultivator being able to not touch any systems, no computers, nothing at all, and literally being able to go through their entire process with a plant, as long as it has a metric RFID tag, and that information being able to be harvested and housed within the system, literally no one touching anything, is the potential of RFID. And we, being on the government side, do not spend as much energy, because we're on the government side, focused on trying to sell directly to the cultivators. But that potential exists. We certainly do everything we can to partner with integrators, third-party integrators that integrate into Metric, and then also cultivators to identify opportunities or folks that they can partner with so that they can gain efficiencies and be much more profitable in their operation.
What is the process to get a new client? If you're talking about trying to maybe get into Washington State, for example, what is that process? Is it just like any other, you know, government contract, or is this fairly unique at the state level, being cannabis SaaS, essentially?
It is generally through an RFP process. And so there's usually a competitive bid, just like traditional government contracting. Government would decide that we want to have a system, just like they might have a system for parking. If you have street parking, you pay via an app. Around here, it's Park Mobile, but they'd have picked Park Mobile over a number of other vendors. They would have done that through an RFP process. So generally, that's the flow. We do have folks in a number of states that are not metric states that find benefits in having the level of compliance and the standard of metric. And so we do have some folks that contract with us directly that are in non-metric states. They also find the benefit of RFID to be something that's a little bit special in being more profitable. Because we have the patent on the use of RFID in the cannabis space, they go through us, and we tend to do everything we can to support those folks. So if anybody's in Washington that's interested, happy to have that conversation.
What are some of the data that you're getting, or do you have any kind of crystal ball predictions or anything that's coming out where you're seeing either more cultivation or you're seeing more of a particular strain name being inputted? Is there anything of that nature that you can share with us that's general enough, yet showing some kind of foreshadowing of what we can expect to come?
Yeah, we see, I mean, our data is quite expansive, but to be very clear, it's not our data. So the data that exists within our system. So when I say ours, I mean the data that's within our system. The data is owned by the state and the licensee. And so we're certainly able to help support and facilitate the analysis and evaluation of that data, certainly able to help derive help states and even in certain cases, cultivators derive insights from that data. But for us, it's not, we're not a data company. We're not, we don't sell anybody's data. We don't do anything with anybody's data outside of their control. It's their data. That being said, there are certain public facing scenarios, like you mentioned Massachusetts earlier. And so using the Massachusetts data, they requested the development of a global product catalog for Massachusetts, which we created for them. They're the only state that we've created it for, and it allows for you to see all of those SKUs in one place, picture details, everything associated with the strain. And that's something that that really is pulled together from the data that is housed within Metric, and that's how that's possible.
Hmm. When once you land a contract, how's the onboarding? I'm curious, because this is kind of top down rather than a company saying we want to onboard this, right? They're kind of being given a regulatory proposal. It's not really an option; they have to do it. Sure. So I'm curious from your client or the individual producers or processors or retailers, how is that onboarding acceptance going? Is it fairly smooth on their end? Are they disgruntled about it? Are they upset about it? Walk us through that process.
Kind of a mixed bag in that case. So we most recently re-onboarded, because of some disruption in the regulatory process, we re-onboarded Oklahoma. Oklahoma is a very mature market. There's nearly 10,000 cultivators in Oklahoma. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it's a lot closer to 10,000 than zero. And so bringing in folks that have been in the space for quite some time and have developed processes and now have to shift those processes, it's a little bit harder. There was 90 days, I believe, in that cycle to be able to bring those folks into the system. And not surprisingly, we had the vast majority of folks trying to get caught up towards the last few weeks of that process. And that creates a logjam. And a logjam isn't fun for anyone. And so we certainly had folks that were working overtime to try and support that. But nevertheless, you have so many people coming in at a point in time. Some of our support hold times were much longer, and our response rate was not where we would like it to be. But that is a very unique situation, and that's really on one side of the spectrum. On other sides of the spectrum, we'll get involved with the state before they've even licensed a single cultivator. And so if nothing exists, it's much, much easier, obviously, to get started, because there's no one that we're training off the bat outside of the folks in the state. And there's no processes that are already in place that kind of have to get rewritten. So it's going to depend on what you're looking at. We've certainly come into states where they've had deployments with some of our competitors and they haven't worked out so well. And so we've been able to move and kind of shift our processes to adjust to their processes such that we can get folks moved over within just a few months. And so, I mean, generally speaking, we can get somebody up and running in no longer than 3 months. I'd say 6 months is closer to the norm. But I would also say that Metric isn't in control of that. There's a lot of other folks that are in control of it, both from the state side, the regulatory side, and then also cultivators and licensees and whatnot. So working together, we can move as quickly as anybody would like. But it's a lot more complicated than just signing up or logging in. There's a real shift in structure in terms of understanding how best to use the product, how best they can deploy it, and really making sure that they're operationally ready for success.
When there's global expansion that we're kind of seeing right now, Colombia and Peru, Argentina, there's other, Italy is probably going to legalize to some degree in the next 2 years. When that happens, will RFID be the way that these other, governments and foreign countries decide to kind of adopt their own policies and procedures for trace and tracking? What do you kind of see on the global scale happening?
I think anywhere in any developed country, you're going to see the use of RFID. I don't think there's any question of that. And the reason I feel that way is because in the agricultural tech space, RFID is ubiquitous. In Walmart, for example, Walmart in January issued a mandate that just about everything in their supply chain has to come to them with an RFID tag on it that follows their structure. So every single thing, the largest retailer in the country, every single thing that comes into their building has to have an RFID tag on it. So I don't think that goes away, regardless of what their track and trace structure looks like in any of these countries. whether it's required by the government or whether it's something that's adopted as a best practice from the operators, that part I'm not particularly sure on, and I don't think anybody really knows. We do the best we can as it relates to the emergent countries, and I mean, you certainly mentioned Italy and Europe. I think Germany is one that a lot of folks pay close attention to. When we evaluate Metric as a partner and as an opportunity to help support and legitimize the legal cannabis market, we look at it in a way that we can provide the most value to making sure that folks that participate in the ecosystem have a standard that is reliable, something that helps folks feel comfortable, helps folks feel like there's a strong level of regulation such that cannabis is comfortable and supported and they feel safe. And that's what we really focus on. In Europe, there could be slightly different flavors of what Metric does or how it does it based on what their specific needs are, just as in certain states, there's been variations in flavors and whatnot. Our goal is to provide that standard backbone of the regulatory ecosystem and to do the very best we can to support the stakeholders within it.
There's a lot of competitors out there that aren't going to make that trip, you know, with you as time goes on. They're going to fall to the wayside. Just like a lot of the producers in Oklahoma, you can't have 10,000 tomato growers in any one region, can't have 10,000 cannabis farmers. Oregon is the craziest thing I've seen next to that. They had about 7,500 licenses at one point, and it's half that now. And it's still too many, 3,000. Is there a learning lesson that you've seen from either the just the crazy amount of production in the cannabis side, or something that you've learned from the competitors out there? I think there's a lot to learn from failure. You know, practice doesn't make perfect, failure does. And when you see all of these competitors not going to make it, you see all of these producers not going to make it, what's the learning lesson? Because it seems like you're in this kind of perfect position to see a lot of these failures occur. What's the takeaway?
I think it's like any industry where there's something that's new. You look at a lot of things that are happening with cryptocurrency and whatnot in the U.S. and I think in lots of parts of the country or lots of parts of the world right now, you see this green rush where folks are kind of running as quickly as they can to get involved in cannabis, and they feel that there's a great opportunity for them to be successful, and they have that sort of manifest destiny concept about them. And they're trying to do things, I like to think at least in most part for the right reasons, but just like any business, you get folks that come in that find a niche and find ways to do this in a more profitable way or in a disruptive way or some unique differentiator, and other folks aren't going to be able to adapt as quickly. And that's part of the process and part of any cycle in a new industry. I think folks that are really, really successful and are going to continue to be really successful in cannabis are the ones that embrace the strengthening of the ecosystem, that want to do everything they can to support the legal ecosystem so that we have access to the same levels of banking opportunities that traditional and participants or traditional industries have. Same thing with insurance, same thing with visibility, and same thing with support from the local governments and from state governments and any stakeholder in the business. We tend to see the most successful folks be the ones that are really supportive of what we're trying to do, and they get behind it. And we tend to see folks that are languishing a little bit, fighting back against what the benefits of Metric can be, the benefits of RFID can be, because it's really about growing and stabilizing something that is nascent into something that is commonplace and really just another thriving industry in the ecosystem. That's what we see. It's not really terribly surprising that you see a large number of a large inflow of folks into the space. That's normal. It's exciting. I mean, it really, the power and the magic that folks can glean from cannabis while maintaining transparency and strong consumer safety, I think is something special. And so it makes sense that a lot of folks want to get involved. But to get involved and to stay involved is going to require constant innovation and growth. And we're really excited to help support that standard and be the backbone for folks to be successful in the cannabis space.
Does it create opportunities as well? Are you seeing M&A opportunities where some of these are potential accretive deals where you would be stronger together than separate? And if so, what is it that you look at when making those decisions?
Absolutely. I mean, for us, at least, we look at some really exciting, I mean, we get really excited when folks come up with more opportunities to expand the use of RFID, because we know they're adding so much value to the ecosystem. So we get really excited about that. We can't do everything on our own. And as I mentioned, we're really focused on supporting government. So that means that we're not kind of going and, you know, knocking on the doors of every cultivator to see if they want to buy our next latest and greatest widget. But there's a space for that. And to the extent that the folks come up with the next latest and greatest widget are able to leverage RFID and are able to find ways to create true efficiency so that some of those cultivators that maybe were part of that original 7,500 in Oregon that have dwindled down, so that they might still be here today, that's huge. And I think the real benefit from that, which you see again in just about every other agricultural supply chain, is the use of RFID. And so we're going to continue to support those folks, and we're going to do everything we can to support them. And while I can't say that we're looking to buy, you know, one or two or 10 tomorrow, we're focused on trying to get profitable on our own here. But I do see tremendous growth and true force multipliers, from folks that are going that direction. And we're going to pay very close attention to that, as we continue to grow.
Well, if anybody wants to, get some more information on what you're doing, whether it's a government agency or investor or otherwise, do you have a website or social media where they could check you out at?
Absolutely. Metric.com is the best source. We're active on LinkedIn, and we certainly welcome any opportunity for anybody to share their thoughts, ways we can get better, things that we're not doing that's so great, things that they'd like to see us kind of double down on. You know, Metric has really had a tremendous journey, certainly a fair share of ups and downs as everybody has experienced when we try and get through a brand new industry. But Metric is absolutely in a great spot to be able to support all those that want to profit and grow within the cannabis ecosystem. We want to do the very best we can, and Metric is absolutely here to provide that.
Well, if you got a LinkedIn contact, we'll put that link in the show notes as well. But I think with that, we're going to have to roll this one up. So I want to thank my guest, Michael Johnson, CEO of Metric. Michael, thanks again for being with us at The Talking Hedge.
Likewise. Thanks so much, Josh.
Appreciate it. I am Josh Kincaid. This is The Talking Hedge. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, or don't, and I'm out.
With that, we're going to roll this one up. I'm Josh Kincaid. This is The Talking Hedge. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, or don't, and I'm out.
Don't forget to smash that like button on your way out. Check out these other videos that we've got.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
99.9% of our DNA is identical. It's a 0.1% that truly makes us different and unique. And that's what the show is about. Find out that 0.1% about your favorite guests. Find out what music they like, their first cannabis experience, and even what their room looked like growing up. But more importantly, or as important, their journey. Learn what makes them unique on Everything Is Personal.